Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at PR@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, today I have an author with quite a childhood story. She is Marcia L. Ceniceros. Marcia is an American author, born in Indianapolis, Indiana, and raised in Southern California. A fiction and nonfiction writer of sci-fi, fantasy, poetry, and the series of God Answered Me, a biography of true stories of child maltreatment. Her achievements include the incredible masterpiece, Sedona 999, a science fiction fantasy in the purest of form, action, and adventure. Awards include a 5-star rating from Reader's Favorite for both her books, Peku and Sedona 999. And just this year, she was presented with 5 stars for Precedence, Bondage is Part of the Game. And I'm thrilled to have her on the air with us. So welcome to the network, Marcia.
Thank you.
I was looking forward to today. Just know there's so much for us to talk about. And on your website, there's a bit of backstory that occurred when you wrote your first book in the series, God Answered Me. You say back in 1992, you decided to write a biography. The completed novel was over 600 pages and included you and your siblings' childhood of abuse. And then you sent the book to get proofed and received a letter with discouraging statements such as, this is not credible and no one's going to trust you, are you hanging out dirty laundry, and these incidents could not have happened as you see them. What a way to put your first piece of work out there. What must have gone through your mind as you read that total discount of your reality?
What I was thinking about when I received that letter, I was just, it amazed me because I could not believe somebody couldn't understand it. And what happened is that I ended up putting that book away and I started thinking about it, well, am I hanging out dirty laundry, you know? And really, it's not. It's what I'm telling and what I want the world to know is that these things do happen. And it affected my brothers, my sisters, and as life went on, I talked to some of my siblings and they said, you know what, you really should do this. So I began to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's for 2 reasons, and it's to bring peace to my siblings, including myself. And these chapters I've written and will continue to write, it's not per se, poor me, I suffered. These are scripts that will establish the destruction and the abuse that has continued on an itinerary at an alarming pace.
And you're right, it does continue at a very alarming pace, and still it's one of those things that people don't talk about, and I would imagine that it was extremely cathartic for you to even be able to put some of what happened on paper and then to have that kind of negative response. Yeah, I don't blame you for putting it away. So what caused you then? Was it your siblings that caused you to pull that back out and to revisit it?
It was that and the death. It was the death. I mean, I lost 4 of my siblings. Both my parents are deceased now. And abuse, child abuse, it will cut 20 or 30 years off your life. Mm-hmm. And this is a proven fact of what happened to Pamela. She was 45. It was a murder-suicide. Her husband killed her, and he killed himself. Oh. Because she did not believe enough in herself to choose a good man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then Keith, he continued on because of this horrible treatment that we went through. My father used to lecture us all the time on Hitler, what a great man Hitler was. And we would have to stand in line for a couple of hours at a time and listen to this. And we were nothing but worthless animals. We were not humans. We were not children. And then Keith, he ended up living his life out in a mental institution. He was 59. That's the only reason he lived as long as he did. He tried committing suicide several times. And then Ron, my other brother, he died in 1995. He was 41 years old when he passed. And he died of AIDS. He was a male prostitute. He served our country. He'd been through some horrific things in his life. And Patricia, she was 20 years old. You know, she was in a horrible motorcycle accident, but she knew she was going to die, and she kept saying that from as long as I could have remembered. She would tell me, I'm going to die. I'm going to die before I'm 21. I know it.
Oh.
And she had a lot of drug use, alcohol use. She was a lesbian, and she told my father, the reason I am is because I hate you. I hate men.
Mm. This is a huge story, and there's so many layers to this. You know, I just interviewed another gal who had a pretty horrific childhood as well, and she was drawing the correlation between childhood trauma and the prevalence of autoimmune diseases as well. So, yes, there's a lot that travels with you. I mean, it absolutely would have to, that takes its toll on you health-wise, whether it's physical or mental or spiritual.
And all of them suffered every type of child maltreatment and abuse you could think of. You know, my brothers, they were molested by relatives. And it's a hard subject to speak about, but the problem is that it's not spoken about enough.
Yes.
And I feel that those words of child abuse and child maltreatment are not strong enough. They need to be stronger in order for the world to pay attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
Because even those survivors, the ones that survive, they're going to be suffering emotional trauma, you know, through the rest of their life. And people don't want to hear about it. They don't want to think about it. And it's sad.
It is. But fortunately, there's somebody like yourself that puts yourself out there to act as a lifeline, perhaps, for others who are either enduring this or know of someone who has or is. And as you say, we just need more people out there talking about it. And you're right. The word child abuse, the two words, they almost don't mean what they should. There needs to be a stronger way to verbalize that.
And, you know, as we hear children dying of the flu on the news, it's sad. It's horrible. But could you imagine that if we heard on the news every day 5 or 7 children died today, they were murdered due to abuse. Now, that's a big realization right there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what's happening. We lose 5 to 7 children every day due to abuse. And it's increasing. From 2015 to 2017, the new report that came out, 6.6 million to 7.2 million.
So we're not getting smarter. Why? Why are the numbers increasing?
I feel that the numbers are increasing because people, they are not educated enough with their children, and they do not see through their child's eyes. They don't understand what the child faces every day. You know, this abuse, it's not only inside the homes, it's in the schools, it exists everywhere. But if people were educated, if they heard this more, it would raise awareness.
And personally, I have a problem with the rampant use of technology today to the point where nobody pays attention to anyone, even parents with their children. All you have to do is go to a restaurant and watch everybody sitting at the table texting or fiddling, and no one's even having a conversation. So how would you even know what your child is going through? How would you even have any empathy for that child if all you're doing as a parent is fooling around on your phone?
Correct. I believe in that. And I noticed that with my children, when my two sons, I have two really great sons, that there was a period in their life where they began changing their clothes, the style of clothes that they were wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And they were beginning to get into gangs.
Yep.
What I did, I quit work. Not everybody can do that, but I quit work. And I went to school with one of my sons. I sat in the classroom with him.
Wow.
And that's what parents need to do.
Yep. Good for you. And you need to be an example for everyone out there to say, hey, you know, you take that responsibility as a parent. That is your responsibility, day, night, whether you like it or not. And to show up at school, that's pretty awesome.
He didn't like it much, but
well,
it worked.
Hey. You know what? We're not friends with our children. We are parents and have been around the block a few times and know what's going on. So, no, we are the ones that need to set those examples.
There were, my sons had many, many friends that used to come and stay at our house. And I'd seen these kids. These kids were good kids. And as time went on, it's really a shame. Half of those children are deceased now.
Yep, we are heading in a strange path. So the first in your series, God Answered Me, how many books are there?
Well, right now I have the introduction out,
mm-hmm.
and I have chapter one out, and I just put out chapter two, and I'm working on chapter three.
So each book is called a chapter, yes?
Yes, okay. It's called a chapter. The reason is I do not have a lot of time. I have my husband who's disabled also, and so I spend a lot of time with him, a lot of time with the grandchildren. And what I'm working, because this subject is so horrific that it takes me a while to write each chapter at a time, because this is only the top layer. I'm not writing about the serious issues that really happened.
Mm.
So this is enough, you know, to give it a real eye-opener.
Well, exactly. Actually, I think it's extremely wise of you, because if you were to wait until you completed all the chapters and put it into one book, it could be a while. And as you say, this is such an emergency type of a situation that each little piece you can get out there as quickly as you can, you don't know who that's possibly helping. So I think that's an extremely wise decision on your part.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking also.
Yep. Well, my hat's off to you, my friend. You have been through hell and back and are brave enough to get out there and try to help others. So job well done.
Thank you.
Yes. So now you went from writing this book or these chapters to a futuristic book set in Alaska, Sedona 999. How did you make that leap?
Oh, well, what I did, I started off with sci-fi. Well, first, my first 600-page book that I wrote that got sent back with that nasty little letter, I put that away, and then I went on to Sedona 999. I started that back in 2010. I had a 25-pound tumor, which I did not know I have. So 5 years before that, I was feeling ill off and on. I was being misdiagnosed. And I started writing this book, Sedona. And then after my surgery, it was a struggle. It was a fight to get through that. I decided I better do this, because life is so short, and you never know what's going to happen. So I went on to write Sedona. In fact, that took me 7 years to write that book.
And how did you come up with the plot? What made you think to go to Alaska with it and set it in the future?
Well, I had that in my mind for many, many, many years. Being a victim of child abuse, you tend to live in a fantasy world a lot. And I used to imagine these stories in my mind, and I had this one in my mind forever, which quite a few more than I'm going to be writing.
And then you came out with a crime sci-fi book, including Russian assassins, Precedence, Bondage as Part of the Game. So just tell us a little bit about that.
That one is about a family torn with a multitude of secrets and betrayal. And my prize-winning character in that one is Bodon. He's a Russian assassin, and he gave up his lifestyle and defected to the United States. But in doing so, he made a lot of enemies. What he did, he ended up going back to Russia and take revenge, because his wife was the mark of an assassin. She was murdered. And where one story ends, we know another one begins. And then with this, his grandson disappeared. And the whole time, Bodon, he's fighting with inner demons. He's trying to find peace, and it's just not happening. He keeps getting pulled back into this. And so what he did, he's determined to find out what happened to his grandson, and he ends up discovering a worldwide cover-up. And this awakened his inner demons against the world of advanced technology.
Wow.
And we have Aaron, who's his son, and he didn't find out that he was Bodon's son until later on, until he was in his teens. And he was a model, then he was a brain surgeon, and then a heart surgeon. And then Abram, he's the grandson, and these people are very, very wealthy. And Abram became confused about his individuality and that intimate strife to believe in himself. And he just went berserk when his relationship broke up. And he ended up disappearing. He went roaming off on the streets. It's about the homeless disappearing on the streets. And a crazed scientist, Dr. Shayla, she's a raving beauty. And then we have Dr. Zachary Bachman, and he's one of Dr. Shayla's experimental victims. And then we have Brian, who's head of security. He's a retired FBI agent. We have Michael. He's a wealthy stockbroker. He's Puerto Rican and bisexual. We have Dr. Jarrett, who's a psychologist and a psychiatrist, and he travels the world to accommodate his victims. So, and we have John. He's a young bellboy who carries a haunting story himself. This has notorious gangsters. It has chases. It has inhuman creatures. It has suspicious deaths and a ton of buried secrets.
This is very rich and flavorful, isn't it? These characters.
Yes. It's a book you will not forget.
I love this. It's called Precedence. Bondage is part of the game. Let's talk about your characters, because these people really sound like characters. Where do they come from? Do they occur to you? Do you create them? Do they start to take off and become their own people? Tell us how that happens for you.
What I do, I start thinking about a character. And then I think, if I was that character, how would I want to present myself? What kind of clothes would I like? What kind of food would I like? What kind of attitude would I have towards others? And this is what I do with each character.
So very, very interesting characters. How do you select the names?
Well, what I do, I look on the internet. I wanted Bodon to be Russian, you know, so I looked in their Russian names. And Kazmar, his wife, is a Russian name also. And then I just like the name Abram, you know, and I like the name Viola. I named Viola. She's Abram's girlfriend. Now she's a volunteer for the homeless shelter. She is named after my granddaughter. So in some of the characters in my books, I name them after my family members.
Mm-hmm. Right. But it sounds like your characters are also part of your family as well. So you seem close to them, too.
Yeah, they're part of me. Mm-hmm. I love them.
I can tell. I love that. Probably when the book is done, you're like, oh, no, I'm going to miss these people.
Well, I plan on writing a book, too, on both Sedona and Precedence.
So we can look forward to second books for both of those.
Yes.
Yes.
Next generation.
Okay. Excellent. You got lots going on in your brain.
There's so much. I have four more books I really need to get out. I'm working on another crime thriller right now, and I have a sci-fi, and then I'm working on chapter 3 of God Answered Me.
Unreal. Wow. I'm so proud of you and for you, my friend. So amazing that you're doing this. And you also have a book of poems I mentioned, Peku.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about those.
I put together, in fact, I had two previous books before this one put out on Barnes & Noble, and that was Flames of Torment and Taking the Mind for a Ride. Those didn't go so well because I didn't know how to do the marketing. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I want to do another book of poetry. So I took the 41 best poems that I had and I put into this book. And Peku means perceived, understood. And that's what each poem reflects in this book. You know, it's about the understanding of life experiences and what people go through. And I ended up getting 5 stars on Reader's Favorite. Mm-hmm. Which was such an honor, because they only do 4 and 5 stars.
Wow.
But some of those poems, I have to say, I put myself in the person's position who was speaking. Mm-hmm. Some of them are not from me. A lot of people say, well, you know, this, you really went through a hard time. Yes, I did. But some of those poems, they reflect the imagination.
Mm-hmm. Still from you, but just a kind of a way to escape.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I understand. All right. So you've published a couple of books. How did that publishing process go for you? How did you get them published?
I self-published myself. It was very difficult for me to learn all this. Mm-hmm. I had to do a lot of reading on it. And what happened is that I would say the most important thing is the editing and proofreading. I mean, I hired editors and proofreaders. And my mistake was that I did trust them. And what happened when I put my book up, somebody came back to me and said, well, you know what, you better reread your books. And recently, again, I had to take them down and have them edited and proofread again and put them back up. It's not an easy task. I would say you really have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. Don't trust anybody. reread and reread after you've had it edited and proofread.
That's a fair warning from you to authors out there. I think it's important not only to get it proofread, but then double check it many times.
Yes.
Yep, yep. So how did publishing your first book change your process of writing, if it did at all?
Well, it did. I was more determined. I was more determined to get this right. It took, like my first ones that I put out was poetry. They were on Barnes & Noble. And at that time, I had to do everything by hand, by paper. I started reading about marketing. There's so much advice out there on marketing, and it's tough. That's all I can say. It's tough.
It is. It's a huge learning curve from going from writer author to marketing, and it's almost a shame that we have to do that because it takes away the time and energy you could have to devote to your writing. But pretty important. So with that, do you have a piece of advice, a little nugget of promotion or marketing wisdom to share?
Yes, it's gonna. If you're going to put out a book, you better plan on spending 4 to 6 hours on marketing. Mm-hmm. You need to hit up, Facebook has a lot of good sites that has book lovers. You want to post your books in there every day. And if you keep that up, you will see the sales in your books go up. You want to have the radio interviews like I'm having with you.
Right.
It's hard. You have to spend about 4 to 6 hours every day on Facebook, on these other sites, Goodreads, get your books out on Lulu.com, Smashwords, every site that you can hit up. And there's many sites out there that I'm finding right now that I can put my book on that I was not aware of. It's a lot of reading.
It is. It's a lot of work. And as I said, it's a learning curve. You know, if you're not familiar with Facebook and Twitter and all that, and if you don't want to be, it's hard to spend 4 to 6 hours a day doing that.
I know I had an author ask me, he says, well, how are you doing it? What do you think about Twitter? Well, Twitter is fantastic. You just got to get on there and do it. And he never had a Twitter account. And then now his books are going up.
Yeah, it's just a matter of learning and then spending the time to do it. Wearing all those hats, right?
That's right. it's a lot.
It is a lot. So you sound like a person that really knows how to grow and is interested in personal growth. So as a writer, as you've been writing these books, what have you learned about yourself?
Not to be afraid, and not to be afraid of failure, because I feel that failure only brings more success.
That's interesting. You always hear people say that they're, you know, you're afraid of succeeding, so you don't do what it takes to be a success.
Yeah, my biggest fear was telling the truth, especially in God Answered Me, what people would think, but you have to think, I've seen this destruction happen. I see it over and over. And people have to be more aware of what's going on. And it's getting over that fear, getting that self-confidence. And I failed quite a bit in my process. And I would just sit down and think, well, let's try it again, you know, see what happens.
What do you think got you through?
Just determination, my will to see this go through, especially with God Answered Me, the experiences in life. And I mean, I love my other books. They're fantasies. They're sci-fi fantasies. They're fantastic. And they will leave a mark on people that read them. They will not forget them. But it's just a determination, having that self-confidence, and people are always going to like and not like your work. So it has to come from within.
Right. But with a childhood that difficult, it must have been difficult for you to find that within. Like, how do you even go about searching around to pull that out?
I'll tell you what happened is that when I was growing up, we were extremely poor. When I went to the library for the first time with my classroom, there was this big pile of books in the floor. And we were told we could take one book home. And I reached in that pile, and the first one that I pulled out was Dr. Seuss, Green Eggs and Ham. when I opened that book, that was my book. I mean, I took that book home. I read that book 100 times.
Oh.
And I knew, you know, already living in a fantasy world most of the time, and seeing that book and seeing what can be created was just like a bomb, an explosion. It just like opened the door to something more. And I knew that that is what I wanted to do. I love creating these fantasy worlds, and I wanted to bring this out so everyone else could enjoy it.
Right. Wow, what a gift you are. What a gift. Were you the oldest?
No, I'm number 6. There's 4 younger than me. There was 10 of us.
Oh, my gosh.
I have 6 brothers and 3 other sisters. I have 1 sister that's living right now.
Okay.
And I have 4 brothers that's alive. The rest are deceased.
Mm-hmm.
My mother recently passed away. My father, he died back in 1998. He was 70. And they both endured, you know, a hardship of life. And I'm not angry at them because I understand what they're... That's what got me through a lot, because you have to understand what came before. And I understood that. And a lot of these experiences that happened to me didn't really phased me until I took it natural, because we were not exposed to a lot of that people growing up until we moved to California. Then it was a completely different story. Well, I learned. It was like a slow therapy, because being around people, you see things. And I started thinking, well, this isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And it just made me more aware. And when I hit my 40s, all of this tragedy and all these memories started coming back even more.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got to my 50s, it was really irritating me. And then I decided, okay, I really have to do this. I've got to bring peace to those that passed, to those victims, you know, to the world, this hidden epidemic that's going on. And these people, these children that's growing up, some of them's going to be running the world. You know?
Yes.
And that's a real scary thought. And because these victims, they carry this with them, these nightmares, these hauntings. And like me, I mean, I still have the memories, but thank goodness I understand. I understand what happened, and I can get through this.
Mm-hmm. Was your mom part of the abuse, or was she a bystander, or did she not know at all?
No, she was part of it too, because her life was very abusive. And my mother never wanted children to begin with.
Oh.
And with the abuse that my father also inflicted upon her, I think this only made her have more of a hate for us.
Okay.
You know, for what she endured.
Right, right. Oh, my.
Yeah, our family was not a loving family. There was no I love you, no hugs.
Mm-hmm.
There was none of that.
And for you to turn around and grow up and then have a loving family that you embrace and grandchildren, it's just nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah, when I was 15, I walked out.
Did you?
Yes, I did. I walked out the front door. Me and my mother had got into some type of argument. I don't even remember what it was. And I said, that's it. And I walked out the front door. And when I was walking down that driveway, I swore at that moment, I will never, never parent my kids the way our parents parented us. And I didn't.
Wow. Wow. So you write about this in your book?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I write about it in the introduction, I write about that too.
Okay. All right.
And in chapter 1, I describe the life growing up and the impact of the move, you know, from Indiana to California. And in chapter 2, I went into a more in-depth look on 2 of my siblings' lives, Keith and Ron. And chapter 3, that will be the remaining part of their life and their demise.
Wow.
And I will include my youngest sister in there, too.
Wow. So you've got a lot more to write about.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be additional chapters to come.
Mm-hmm. Do you do any public speaking or speaking at schools or any kind of outside venues like that?
I have one coming up, March 17th.
Good.
Bolton School District.
Good.
I will be there, and I will be speaking to the children about characterization and what made me, you know, want to write.
Excellent.
I'll be telling a little bit of my story there.
Wow. Yeah, this needs to happen for somebody who's had the experiences that you have had and turned it around and can write about it and to go into schools and talk about it. That would be so inspiring to those little ones that need a lifeline.
Yeah, and they need it.
Yes.
Because from the recent reports also, I mean, when I read last week, I was reading 160,000 children per day are afraid and miss school because of bullies. This is too hidden. We have the internet, there's groups out there, but it's not enough. It's not happening because the numbers are increasing by a phenomenal amount.
No, clearly if the numbers are increasing, something isn't right. And we need to try to find the root cause of that. It's not a random occurrence that the numbers are increasing.
Yeah, they need to add something to that child abuse and child maltreatment to make it stand out more.
Yep. Well, you are doing your part, so congratulations to you. It's a big leap to get out there and talk about it. So I know we've danced around a lot of topics here today, and I believe there's a lot more to learn and talk about, but wrapping up, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to bring up today?
Yes, there is, and I would say to the parents out there that have children, let your children dream. Let them have their imagination. Doesn't matter if they're 16 years old and want to play on the floor with Hot Wheels and Barbie dolls, let them do it. You know, because this only opens the doors to something much greater than some of the things that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Let them have fun with their life.
Right. Wow. Well, Marcia, where can folks go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
I have my books on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lulu.com, Smashwords, Goodreads. There's other places that they're on. But those are some of the places.
And your website?
I have Facebook, which is M.L. Seniceros. And I have a Wix blog that's Marcia L. Seniceros. And I'm also on Twitter, M.L. Seniceros. I'm on LinkedIn. That's M.L. Seniceros also.
And I want to spell your last name. First name is Marcia, M-A-R-S-H-A, middle initial L. Seniceros is spelled C-E-N-I-C-E-R-O-S. C-E-N-I-C-E-R-O-S. Wow, Marcia, what a story you have to tell, and what a positive outcome and a legacy that you are leaving for the world by sharing what you have gone through. Thank you so much for being so open and willing to talk about this today.
You're welcome, Pat. I enjoyed being here.